No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. We have no guests today. I've been tied up for working on the Democratic primary here in Washington. So now that I've had a few days to catch my breath, we'll start having guests again next week. So please bear with us. Today we're going to continue the discussions we've had for the last few weeks. And we're going to talk about what's been going on in America this week. And hopefully we'll get you to join in the conversation. But before we get started, let me first introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from Arizona. Kathleen has been a little cranky lately. If you're a regular listener, you probably know that Kathleen has been a little cranky lately. So please call in so she just doesn't pick on me for the whole next hour. Hi, Kathleen. As always, thanks for getting the conversation started.
Oh, Senator Brown, it is so nice to speak to you. How are you?
Where's Kathleen? Who are you? Get Kathleen on the air.
I have so much respect for you. I know you've been very, very busy guy.
Oh my God.
Going on with all the politics in that wonderful nation of ours, Washington, D.C. Tell us about it. I mean, I'm really curious. Let me ask you something. I kept on getting, and I don't know how this gentleman got my email, but Pete Ross, was he somebody that was running? Who was he?
He was running for my job, actually, but wasn't my job. It was Paul Strauss, who we've had on the show, who was the other United States senator. Pete was running, and he ran hard, and he probably, I don't know, the statistics aren't in yet, but he probably outspent Paul 20 or 30 to 1. I mean, he just spent a ton of money trying to win this job. When he ran against me, he spent $211,000 against me, and it looks like he even spent more against Paul. But that was one of the things that came out of the election. Paul won with 60% of the vote, a decisive victory for the other United States Senator seat in the District of Columbia. And that's kind of how the election went. There was a message from the people: you can't buy a political seat in the District of Columbia, and that's a good thing. And it was also a referendum, I believe, on corruption. We have a mayor who's under federal investigation. He hasn't been charged with anything yet, but he's been under investigation for his campaign in 2010, which has lasted. This investigation has been 3.5 years long, and several of his top people, four of his top people, have gone to jail. In addition to that, we've had three council members, one of them's gone to jail, one of them's resigned, and one of them was beaten in the last election but is on his way to jail for taking bribes from the FBI. And we had a council member who is under a scrutiny for a deal that he made when he was on the Metro board, and he lost after being a longtime city councilman, Jim Graham. in Ward 1. And Vincent Orange, who is a friend of ours, I mean, he's very good on statehood and we love him. He only got 2% of the vote, even though in the last election he got 147,000 votes, because he has also been under investigation for taking consecutively numbered money orders. So I think the message that came out this week in Washington, D.C. is we want our politics to be honest, and we want, you know, we don't want a cloud of suspicion hanging over the Wilson Building, which is City Hall. So we've nominated Muriel Bowser, who's somebody with a spotless record from Ward 4, as a Democratic candidate, and she will face another challenger, another councilman, an independent named David Catania, in the fall. But I think the message that came out this week is, hey, look, you got to play it straight up. You got to do, you know, you got to be honest. And I think that's a good message.
Well, it's interesting to me, and I don't know if you're somewhat prohibited from speaking about this, but I was surprised again that Mr. Ross was Anglo, right? Was he not?
Yeah.
Okay. And the second thing that amazed me is how the heck he got my email, because I'm not in anybody's email at all, except I think Anita Bonds got my email. And I'm just amazed how easily, A, your emails are acquired, but how they would know that I would even be interested in D.C. politics. But, I mean, what's amazing to me is this guy ran against you during your time. And there was so, I mean, he was in what I consider, because I lived in New York and rented from a slum landlord. A slum landlord, was he not?
Yeah. Yes, he was. And he was convicted of.
Convicted of having leaded paint in the homes where young children were.
Yeah. And his insurance company actually had to pay a six-figure settlement to a woman who's, they determined her son was permanently brain damaged. He's now a teenager. Yeah, he was not a nice guy, and that's one of the reasons that we work so hard to beat him. And you know, I'm happy to say that the voters of the District of Columbia, I mean, you know this, Kathleen, you've been in politics a long time. The politicians and the press, they always talk about how dumb voters are. But
right.
Voters aren't dumb. They're not dumb. They actually are the people, they're the greatest part of our democracy, and they move the ball forward. And time after time, we say, oh, you know, they don't understand what's going on. They're simply moved, and that's not true. I think they do know what's going on. And just like in statistics, you know, the aberrations, if you do a random sample in a large universe, tend to cancel each other out. I think that happens in voting too. I think that the extremes tend to cancel each other out, and that people push things towards the middle. And the middle message coming through loud and clear this time is don't be corrupt, be straight up. Be, you know, the mayor hasn't even been charged with anything. There are a lot of people that believe that he didn't do anything wrong. But I think the voters said, look, we want everything to be above board. We don't even want you don't have to prove that these guys aren't doing the right thing. We want to know all the time that they are, with no suspicion whatsoever. So I think that's an important message, and I think it was delivered this week. I think the voters are a lot smarter than we give them credit for. Which leads me to my next thing, which is the Supreme Court decision on
right. –
You know, the Supreme Court decided this week that you can give as much money as you want to anybody. And I think that's a terrible thing, because that's what happened with the mayor. The mayor supposedly was involved in taking $600. Now, he's been charged with this. He hasn't been charged with this. Let me rephrase that. He's been accused of this, and nobody's proven it yet. But he was supposedly involved in taking $650,000 from a guy that had a government contract for hundreds of millions of dollars with the district to use to get out the vote. And this guy, Jeffrey Thompson, pleaded guilty in court to giving out more than $3 million out of his pocket to everybody, just about every politician in the District of Columbia, not me or a guy named Tommy Wells, but almost every other politician, and lots of money to Hillary Clinton. He's just throwing his money everywhere. And the Supreme Court now says, hey, that's okay. What do you think of that?
I think this is just disgusting, because what's always been happening is that there's no way that you and I can contribute like the Koch brothers or any of the other Democratic groups and special lobbyist groups. They will always be able then, it gets to the point where politics then does not represent the common guy. You need his vote, but if you don't get any money, it doesn't matter if you got, I mean, we've seen it time and time again where everyone sits there and gets excited about an issue that they become involved in, and it makes them decide to run to change the way things are because it's not right. But, you know, when you get in there and you realize how much money it takes to win an election, you have to, it becomes then, well, I have to have money. I mean, I can't do this. I can't further the cause unless I get elected. And so no matter promises you make to people, whether it's to clean up a river that is so full of toxins that it's poisoned their children, you know, at the end of the day, the guy's got to get elected. And while he may say the things he wants to say, doesn't mean he's going to be able to do them once he's in politics. This is just, to me, just, I mean, why? I'm actually at the point, and you never know, I never say this, why go vote? Just let the guys who raise the most money decide. I mean, because that's what it's going to be at. Unless we, you know, as the citizens can do whatever they want, they have the ability to create a critical mass, and people should be outraged at this. And there should be some kind of swell among the grassroots that says this is not, this has nothing to do with your First Amendment right. First Amendment rights should be able to speak on what you believe in, not buy enough of what you believe in to make sure that other people buy into it. I mean, I don't understand how this can be part of the reason that you know, to put limits is against your First Amendment.
Well,
this
you know what?
Buying. This is buying those opinions and that freedom.
Well, you know, it's funny because what keeps on coming back to me is that old expression that money talks.
Right.
You know, money talks. You know, it's kind of funny because the Supreme Court is saying that now, that money talks. But nobody ever says that in a positive way. It's not money talks and that's a good thing. You know, the people with money get their way. It's such part of our culture that we understand this, that we, you know, that we have these little cliches about it. But the court seems to be saying something different. And you know, it's a complicated issue. Somebody wrote in, I see a Skype here that says, it tells us that they can no longer win unless money is part of the equation. And the system must be rigged in order for democracy in that form to work. But who wins? I mean, that's absolutely true. It's not just a matter of money. We saw that with Strauss's election, for example. The guy spent a lot more money than he did. But I can tell you, anybody in politics knows what a help it is. I mean, you and I have been there.
You can't buy the stamps. You can't buy the transportation to get the people there, to get your volunteers. And, you know, it's interesting because I guess Chief Justice Roberts said that he said that overall limits could not survive First Amendment scrutiny because there's no right in our democracy more basic than the right to participate in electing our political leaders. Well, I don't think they meant to buy, you know, a people's opinions. What they believe they were speaking about was to vote, to be involved where you go and you vote or you go and you listen to a campaign speech. This whole thing where, you know, there's no limit on how much money you can give. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand what happens with these elected guys, whether they're Supreme Court justices or the politicians, where they get to a point, there's some line that gets crossed where all common sense, all morality, all any kind of identity with the common person who makes this country great just gets a huge disconnect. And these guys just believe they know better. Come on, it's common sense. Just because you're a Supreme Court justice does not mean you know something that's greater than what I do and you do, which is money corrupts.
Well, and that's
absolutely.
And that's the thing that you and I both understand by working on campaigns. I mean, how do you take, excuse me, how do you take $100,000 or $200,000 or $500,000 for somebody and then not answer the phone when they call?
Exactly.
Of course you answer the phone when they call. Of course you help them out. And the pressure to take the money is really, really dramatic. I mean, you and I worked at the DNC when the RNC raised $10 for every dollar we raised.
That's right.
So we understand the pressure to take the money. And this is exactly what happened in D.C. It's funny that according to Jeffrey Thompson, the man that gave the money, the mayor and his people asked him for $650,000. Now, we don't know if that's true, but that's what he says. They asked him for $650,000 to get out the vote. And we understand, you know, you and I have both been there. We understand the pressure to get people out and get, you know, you see the other guy bringing seniors to the polls and buses and putting up yard signs and doing all the other things, putting TV commercials out and doing direct mail and all these other things that need to be done in a campaign. And there's a lot of pressure to get money. And so we need to stop that. The government needs to fund elections.
Well, and a lot of people say, oh, my God, you're talking about government. But this is one thing where it should all be put in a pot. Everybody should be given the same amount of airtime on, you know, primetime TV at the same thing, everyone, and let people actually have to do a little research. The thing that concerns me about this, too, is that when is it, you know, you talk about freedom of speech, and the thing that's so important and makes us so different is that everyone has a voice and everyone can be heard. But when money buys up advertisement and sets that rate so high because now they know that the Koch brothers or whatever brothers are can spend whatever amount they charge, where is the little person's voice going to be heard?
And you know, look at the things they say, too. I mean, you know, I think
they lie.
Yeah, I think of John Kerry. John Kerry, who right-wing people called a coward, a man who served as a swiftboat captain, which was considered the most dangerous thing you could do. And he got 3 Purple Hearts and a Silver Star. I mean, the man got 3 Purple Hearts and a Silver Star, and these people tried to make him look like he was a coward. And so that's a problem, too, is the information they put out there. Who regulates that?
Nobody
does.
And so I can, if I have enough money, I can go and start a rumor on anybody, and there's nothing anyone can do as long as I've got the money to buy the airtime. And that's one thing I found even in a small town politics when I was working for my helping my dad out as a mayor. They absolutely lied and made resolutions and tried to pass it. But, you know, you have to now prove yourself to be, you know, once it was very serious, if you claimed somebody did something, you had to be damn sure you had everything in a row and you could prove what you were saying they did. Now anyone can say anything about you. You have to spend the time and money to prove that it's not true. And that's what's gone wrong with the United States and with American politics. And I know people hate the government. I know they're tired of politicians. But damn it, if you keep on sending the people who are corrupt and have their own agenda and can't stand up, and in a sense, if you're going to be a long-term politician, you are going to be very concerned about where all your money comes. If you're going to be someone who feels, and maybe I know you hate term limits, but maybe the Senate should be 2 or 3, because at least that person's agenda when he gets there, he knows he's a businessman or he's been a farmer or he's been a doctor, whatever it is, he knows what needs to get done and maybe can do it without getting caught up in this, I don't know, a career kind of thing where you know, Michael, that things are decided on the Hill that has actually nothing to do with the subject. It's all, well, like you vote this and then I'll vote that. And that's the way how it's like a swap thing, you know. Oh, this is important to you. Okay, I'll vote for you, but you're going to vote on this. And it's not necessarily where they look at the law that they're actually going to vote on and say that's what we're voting on, because it's all so intertwined. You can't separate issues anymore. So I don't know. I think if we have any future, people are going to have to get involved. They're going to have to run. And there's going to have to be the good people, and you're going to have to freaking sacrifice. I'm sorry, you are going to have to sacrifice if you want your children and their grandchildren to have any kind of a world that what we once thought was good.
Well, absolutely. And you know, with the proliferation of this instant media, too, something gets out there, and before you have the chance to defend yourself, it's all over the place, you know? That's the old political saying, right? That they accuse you on page one, and then if they find out you're wrong, they put it on page 12. So it really doesn't have the same impact. And that's the thing with Twitter and you know, Facebook and all this stuff. As soon as something gets out there, it's everywhere. And if you have if you can manipulate the news coming in and going out, then you have control of everything, and that's the worst thing about this.
We have a couple comments here. I mean, we have one that said it's almost like Hollywood, where the children of the actor become actors. In politics, it's almost a family dynasty now. And so many people are amazed that the Bush family, all of them, are in politics. What's up? Well, I think it's kind of like a thing in any kind of business, whether you're a dentist or an accountant. If you have children, first of all, politics, no matter what, is like celebrityness. If you're a good-looking family, you're going to be put out there, and you kind of get that celebrity status. But it's a way in which you know how things work, because let me tell you, politics, I mean, I talk about how to get involved. I have gotten involved on many levels. It's not an easy game. If you have a purpose and a passion to do what's right, then you will find a way in which to, I hate to say manipulate, but work within the system so that you get your point out. And sometimes you win and sometimes you lose, but you always got to go towards the winning the battle. I mean, it's like anything. There's a dynasty. You know, you've met people who, like the Waltons, they've got family dynasty. And their kids will always probably be in there because they know how to work it. They know what to do to get to the top. And that's what happens in politics, too.
Well, even more, yes, and even more important than that, given this ruling, is that you have the connections. You know, you make the connections. If you know, if you're the governor and you're connected to the Koch brothers and they're giving you all this money, when your son comes along and wants to be the senator, of course, who do you go to? You go back to the Koch brothers. You're right. Connected to them. And this was, again, you know, it's funny that all this is coming down while this election, right after this election in D.C., because that's exactly what happened there. Jeffrey Thompson was connected to everybody. He was connected to all the politicians. So when they needed money, who did they go to? They went to this guy who they already knew. They didn't go out there with a message and say, you know, if you believe the way I believe, then send your $15, your $25 and help support me win this, help support me to win this election. They went to the guys had the money and said, look, you've got a $300 million contract with the city and I need some money. And the guy said, sure, here's the money. I think that's what happened. That hasn't been proven yet, but it certainly looks that's the way that it went down. And somebody's just written in, saying that you need to work with all the gatekeepers. Yeah, well, when you narrow down the gatekeepers, it makes it easier and easier for you. And it also makes it, as a politician, and it also makes it easier to be corrupt.
Exactly.
So, and we know that. We've seen this.
And not only that, but even though you may have a family, you know, I think of Ron Brown, who ended up, you know, was a lawyer for the Democratic Committee when we were working there, right, who later went on to become the Secretary of Commerce. Let me tell you, this guy, I'll never forget him. He was what a politician should be. He remembered everyone who did everything for him, whether it was to take him up an elevator or do his dry cleaning, or someone who was an intern years and years ago. The guy always remembered and always appreciated what everyone did for him. And he was a very, very smart man. And he had a son that I feel like, you know, if you're going to be in politics, you got to take the good with the bad. And I think he would have been very disappointed in his son for what he's done with his power and his position. So it's not always true that, you know, you may have a father, you may have someone who started off in politics with the right ideas. And then it's like anything, you know, power, as they say, power corrupts. Absolutely. Absolute power always corrupts. And it does. It's something that you have notoriety, you get special privileges, and everyone in human behavior likes to be, I think, kind of acknowledged. It's just a matter of knowing what it's about, that you're trying to help people change their lives. You're not making money off of the fact that they need that change. And that's what a lot of people get sidetracked, because it's expensive to live in Washington. It's expensive to have, you know, campaigns. It all takes a lot of money, even if you have their best interest at heart. And we got to make sure, as American people, I think that we try to make that journey shorter and easier for the common person to do, because that's the only chance we're going to have at changing some of these people's, you know, positions.
Well, and you know what? It gets easy for you to be corrupted, not only because you need the money, but there's a certain amount of vilification that goes into the electoral process. In other words, you want to put more money into education, and your opponent doesn't want to put more money into education. So you vilify that person. You say, well, his ideas aren't good. My ideas are better. We'll educate more students. We'll make the education better for poor people. We'll do positive things. You know, it's really easy to say, I can't let this guy win because he's a bad person. So if I have to take a little money, if I have to corrupt the process a little bit to win, it's easy to justify that. And that's wrong. And that's what the voters spoke out about. But what I want to read to you right now are two comments. One that really, really surprised me, from Bradley Smith, the chairman of the Center for Competitive Politics, a law professor at West Virginia University and a former member of the Federal Election Commission, who, you know, regulates money in politics. He said, as the court noted, some may find the existence of money in politics repugnant, but the First Amendment protects flag burning, funeral protests, and Nazi parades. It surely protects political campaign speech. And if government wants to regulate such speech, it better have a very good reason. So he's in favor of the decision. But then I want to read you the other side, too. And this is a guy that I agree with, Senator Bernie Sanders, who's an independent from Vermont. And he says the Supreme Court is paving the way towards an oligarchic form of society in which a handful of billionaires like the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson will control our political process. And that, I believe, is absolutely true. And that's why this is such a terrible decision.
People need to wake up, because I think it's come to the point where the billionaires are deciding what our educational system is. As we've had several of our shows about the Common Core, that simply to me is a way to dumb our children, to make them aspire to less and not to think out of the box and not to be creative. And it's just training them to be little monkeys. I'm sorry. And that's already happened. And that's happened while we all sat around, you know, maybe being more interested in March Madness than what kind of stuff is being taught to our children. And if you don't have children, surely you have relatives who have children. And if you want to be selfish, which I always say I don't get, these are the people that are going to invest into the next tax base that's going to allow you to be able to pull from your Social Security. So we need to get our crap together and make sure these kids can be creative, have the jobs, and be the answer to the problems we're going to be facing. So, God, I don't know. What takes America to wake up? That'd be my next question to somebody out there.
Takes listening to Shadow Politics. And we're going to take a little break now. And let me tell you something. It's true what Kathleen said about, you know, people using their money to start vicious rumors. Let me tell you that many years ago, she was jealous of me. and she started the vicious rumor that I can't dance. I am a Vic Domit dance school graduate.
Hey, listen,
I can dance like nobody's business. But
anybody who comes to visit their friend in New York, and we're at that age, we're doing the underground scene, and you show up in a camel hair coat, anybody out there's got it. That's all I have to say in my defense.
You know,
Michael came to New York in a camel hair coat. It was one of those like little pajama things, you know, like where it's like a robe and it has a little tie.
I was a trendsetter, damn it. And on that note, we're going to take a little break. I'm going to go look for my camel hair coat, see if it still fits. And we're going to take a little break, and we're going to play in honor of the Supreme Court, we're going to play Money Machine by James Taylor.
We'll be
back in a few minutes.
When I was just a child, my life was oh so simple, and the ways of the great world seem strange and funny. Then when I was a young man, I learned of that machine. It turns out all those bales of precious money.
Just got an email from the National Association of Camel Hair Coat Manufacturers. Evidently, they're coming after Kathleen, and I don't blame them.
Hey, they got to stop the robe look, you know, where it's just like, you know, like middle. It's like, you know, the white man's kind of thing. I'm sorry.
It but was the 1980s.
Yeah, but it was that camel
was
hair.
It was the 1980s.
Robe, just got out of bed or something.
All right, but, well, let's change.
There's hope. There's fashion. They can always hire a designer.
Since you said there's hope, let me share the good news this week. We had some important happenings in our struggle for equality through DC statehood last week. We have two new co-sponsors, one in the House and one in the Senate, for our bill to make the District of Columbia state, the New Columbia Admission Act. And in the House, Representative Betty McCollum, who's from the 4th District in Minnesota and a Democrat, signed on. This makes the third Minnesotan that we have from Congress, Tim Walz and Keith Ellison, who are also members of the House from Minnesota, are also co-sponsors. But we don't have any senators from Minnesota, so we got to work on them. And Al Franken is someone that I've met with personally and talked to about statehood, so I hope we can get him. And Amy Klobuchar is the other senator from Minnesota, so we're going to be working on them in the weeks ahead. But the even better news is that we got Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio, and he's become a co-sponsor. And you might remember, Kathleen, that we ran into him in Charlotte, and we talked to him for a few minutes in Charlotte after you and Rachel and I finally had a decent meal. I forget where we went, to the
right.
Palm or something, right?
Right.
We got tired of eating hors d'oeuvres at receptions, and we ran into Sherrod, Senator Brown, coming out of a meeting, and we talked to him, and I got to talk to him last month at a thing for Columbus, because Columbus wants to be the next venue for the Democratic National Convention. So he was there, and I got to talk to him a little bit. So I'm glad that Senator Brown has come on board. Thank you, Senator, and also Representative McCollum. Thank you so much for being co-sponsors, because this is important to the people of the District of Columbia. It's important to the people of America. Our voice should be part of the conversation.
Well, definitely, so, your voice should be part of the conversation.
Whether you wear camel hair or not, I want to point that out.
Everyone has a right to dress poorly.
Whether you dress in camel hair, GQ style, as we call that, or you want to dress in black leather, no matter
you should be able to do it. And you shall, and you do. So that's always good.
So let's talk for a moment. I want your input on this. They found two tunnels in San Diego, and I know you're familiar with this problem because
yes.
you're from Douglas, Arizona, where they found one of the most sophisticated.
First.
They found 80 of these in the last 8 years, all in Arizona and California. But they're so sophisticated for smuggling drugs and people into the United States. The ones they found in San Diego, one of them was 700 yards long. That's almost half a mile. And it had an elevated railroad system, a multi-level rail system, and it had ventilation. And one of the this big drug dealer, Mexican drug dealer, what do you know his name, Kathleen? I can't remember. But the guy that they just nailed in Mazatlan last month was snuck through one of these tunnels and spirited off to Mazatlan. So this is pretty sophisticated stuff that these people.
And it's interesting how many layers there are that people are involved. For instance, the one in Douglas, it was right on the border. It wasn't very long. But what would happen is in the gentleman's house, who was, I think his kids were godchildren to a gentleman in Douglas, long-standing sheriff, mayor, blah, 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 always been involved in drugs. He owned the land. He was also the godfather to these children of the guy who's where the tunnel started. And it would the pool table would lift up, and that's where the entrance to the tunnel would be. And then they would go down the tunnel and come up into the middle of a warehouse as it was on the other side of the border, load up the trucks, and boom, they don't have to go through any kind of a checkpoint. And who knows how long that went on, forever and ever. But, of course, the gentleman who's the godfather to the Mexican drug transporter always go, you know, I own the land, but I don't know what's inside. You know, I mean, there was probably some dummy corporation that actually was renting it from him. But what was also great was that when they weren't using it, they filled it up with water.
Yeah.
Now, in Arizona, that used to be a thing everyone did. You would soak the lawns. You know, this is before water was such an issue when I was growing up. So it wasn't uncommon to see people's yards, like, just, you know, like, with water, like maybe an inch with water, because you were flooding and soaking it. And so, you know, people after a while were kind of like, I wonder why he's doing that an awful lot. But who knows how long it went on.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. It had air conditioning. You know, some of them say having to have like a little light rail system. It's just, there is so much land between the Pacific Ocean and, say, over here by Douglas, which is the last little border town on the Arizona side. There's just so much land. There's no way that you can patrol it all. And, you know, unfortunately, there's a will, there's a way, and they're getting right. – it's amazing how they come across. You think, okay, well, they can't think of anything else. Well, I know that in Mexico they have these launchers, you know, like grenade launchers, but they put tennis balls. And they stuff the tennis balls full of coke or whatever and then launch it across into the other side. And maybe it comes out in First and Second Street and the guys catch the ball and off you go. You know, from ultra gliders coming across at a low angle so that they can't be picked up. And they wire, you know, they have those walkie-talkies and you, hey, you know, Juan or just Joe. We don't want to be like we're sounding like punches. You know, hey, you know, there it is. I'll meet you and, you know, I'm coming over. Be there to catch it. And he throws it down and goes back to Mexico. There's always going to be a way. I mean, they're coming up with more and more unbelievable things they do in just transporting the cars over. You know, I mean, they do uncover it before, you know, everyone. There's 10 that gets through.
Right. So, well, and, you know, the thing that surprised me, really surprised me, because I remember the Douglas thing and how sophisticated it was and how they flooded it, but it ran next to a water pipe that was a city water pipe, so it was hard to detect it and all this stuff. But the thing that really surprised me is the woman that ran the warehouse in San Diego, who they've arrested, is 73 years old. This is not, you know, we have this idea of like a handful of, you know, young guys who are ruthless and
these are all accomplished citizens.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are accomplices and sees a way in which to make money. And you know, that's one thing we have to start talking about, too, is the whole thing about legalizing marijuana, how much Colorado is making, you know, as far as the selling of it and all the issues that are coming about. Because I gather you can smoke in your home. But, heck, what do you do if you work for, you know, a federal agency like DES and they you know, they give you a urine test? I mean, it's definitely interesting how the Arizona, how the state law is going, is clashing with the federal law and what's going to happen. Because I do see a movement. I do see people who benefit from, you know, from being able to use marijuana when they had pain. God, my great grandmother used to do it. She was considered a midwife and people just knock on her door and she used to give them all kinds of plants to do all kinds of things. And, you know, marijuana was one of the stuff that she gave them. You know, she was a medicine woman. So I mean, yeah, and I understand about everything else, but I think we got to start talking about the benefits in many ways to legalizing marijuana. And you know, I deal with a lot of younger kids. It's amazing how the younger generation is not necessarily into pot smoking, but a lot of them feel all of them will just have a nation of complete idiots. Well, I'm not sure that that's the case either. I was listening to this woman who was on, was it Dateline or 60 Minutes, and she was a soccer mom. It's not the, you know, what Cheech and Chong, or remember what were those three guys from Saturday Night Live that would always portray what a stoner was. I don't believe that that's the case anymore. So it's going to be interesting to see.
Well, you know, we have to. Yeah, and we have to, you know, that was the next natural question I was going to ask. If we do legalize it, if we do regulate marijuana, do we cut down on the profit and therefore, you know, cut down on the illegal activity, which the sale of this drug on the black market finances. So, I mean, that's part of the upside. But you're right. It's a very complicated issue. We've just decriminalized it here in the District of Columbia. Now, the law hasn't taken effect yet. But if the law that was just passed takes effect, the worst that can happen to you if you are caught with an ounce or less of marijuana is a $25 fine. Now, you're not allowed to smoke it in public, which, of course, is the same as alcohol. You're not allowed to drink in public in the District of Columbia either. And if the law goes through, the maximum penalty would be $25, and it would be, you know, like a traffic ticket. And one of the big motivators here was not only to stop the illegal use and transport and profit in marijuana, but also stop destroying people's lives. You know, you have kids who are busted for smoking pot and then have a criminal record. And, you know, they can have a federal criminal record and it can keep them from getting all sorts of jobs. And I think more than anything, that was a motivating factor here in Washington. But you're right, it's really complicated. There were kids in Washington where it has been fully decriminalized, I think legalized, there was a bunch of kids arrested, not kids, but young people arrested who were camping in Mount Rainier National Park, and they were smoking pot, and the rangers busted them, and they said, wait, it's legal in Washington. And they said, yeah, but you're in a federal park, and there's a federal law against it. So you could smoke it across the street, but you can't smoke it here. Right. So it's going to be complicated. You know, just like it was with alcohol.
But you know, when you think about it too, I didn't realize this, I was watching a documentary about it. It's really been illegal since the 50s. It's not like it has been an illegal substance from the beginning of time.
Right.
It wasn't. And then all of a sudden there was this movement to, you know, to get, you know, to completely, you know, criminalize it. And when you sit there and you think of that, you can go to jail and spend more time in jail because you may have pot on you or you were selling it, then if you were a murderer or a rapist. Something is really, really, really wrong. I had a friend who was going up to grand jury, and it was at the time the boy was, I think, 17, and he raped a 14-year-old. I think it was 4 years later, this case is just coming up because they say that, you know, there's so much of the court system that's bogged down by, you know, a lot of these kinds of cases where, you know, it's marijuana or whatever. And I just don't think that that's right. And I think people are going to start seeing it in a different light. I mean, if you're going to be anti anything, then be anti everything, and alcohol should be treated in that way also, and we'd see how quick it would change.
Well, that's true. I mean, I don't see that it's any more dangerous than alcohol. And, you know, I think that we've reached a point where it's better to be – I don't want to see it legalized, but I do want to see it decriminalized so that people don't suffer severe penalties from it. And so that it can be regulated and we can take some of the profit out of it for illegal, you know, for organized crime. And we can regulate it and make it safer and make people, you know, not ruin their lives over something that really, in my opinion, isn't any more harmful than drinking. So we'll have to have somebody on.
We will soon find out. I think it'll be easy to find. And, but you know, the thing is people say, well, okay, you get a legalized marijuana, then you're going to cocaine and meth. And I'm like, you know, look, I go to a bar and I can order a glass of wine, but there might be tequila and vodka and everything else. But it doesn't mean I'm going to buy it just because it's there.
Well, no. And you know what? I think we need to look at places where it has been legal, like Amsterdam, and see what the downside is has been to their society. I don't think they've suffered greatly from it. And you can walk into a bar in Amsterdam and get hashish or marijuana. Yeah, and you know, I don't think that they've seen a real disintegration of their social fabric over it. So, you know, I think we have to look at that. When we legalized medical marijuana, when we made medical marijuana available in Washington, D.C., one of the things they did was they looked at California. The law in California, many people have criticized because they said it was tantamount to legalizing it. So they took a long, hard look at California. And they put together a set of regulations in Washington, keeping in mind what the downside had been in California. And I think that's a smart thing to do. I think we have to look at that. And we're going to have to get somebody on the show. But we're running out of time here. And the last thing, we got to talk about this because you and I have tried and tried and tried, Kathleen, to get some gun people to come on the show and talk about this. But you know, talk about these issues. But once again, we see at Fort Hood in Texas, four dead, several wounded. The guy that shot all these people was diagnosed with PTSD, and he was being treated. Nonetheless, he went and bought a gun at semi-automatic weapon at the same store that the last shooter at Fort Hood. Remember the guy that killed so many people at Fort Hood in 2009? Same store bought the gun. The thing that I told you earlier that I found really interesting is in the Washington Post, there was a political cartoon this morning of a guy standing behind an NRA podium, and it said, and he was saying, if we want to stop these shootings in schools, what we need to do is put an armed guard in every school. Well, look at how many armed guards you had at Fort Hood. Look at how many armed guards you had at the Navy Yard. This doesn't stop anybody.
Well, and I think the other big question that needs to be asked, and, you know, I've been working and trying to get some of these Armed Forces tribute bikes to veterans' homes and hospitals, is how long it's taking for our veterans to get the care that they need. Well, and that is got to be something, yes, it is the violence and the killing. This guy needed help, and it is probably, I'm sure we'll hear more in the future, but these veterans take way too long to get the help that they desperately need to be able to somehow make it in society. And that's something that, you know, shame on our military, shame on the VA, because it's time and time and time again. It's not like it's just one issue or one area that has a problem. That's all I hear, how long it takes to get these veterans the help they need. And that's something we should all be completely angry about, embarrassed, and want to finish something and do it right.
Well, you know, and that's one of the problems that you and I have been having in trying to get somebody on the show to talk about this, because we understand that it's a complex problem and it's going to take everybody being part of it. And, you know, as you and I both said, you and I differ a little bit on the whole gun control thing, but neither one of us wants to ban guns. Nope. I mean, we just want to come up with a workable policy which allows people to exercise their Second Amendment rights, but on the same token keeps the rest of us safe.
And it's going to take money. It's going to take taxes. And when these guys go off to places, and as war down the road becomes our future, which it always seems is going to be more high tech, going to be more kind of dramatic, stresses, problems that happen, and we're going to have to be ready, and we're going to have to fund it. So if you want to be involved in wars, guys, you got to fund what comes home.
Well, and that's something that's changed in our society, hasn't it? Because when the guys came home from the Second World War, they were not only treated like heroes, which they were, which all soldiers are, but they were not only treated like heroes, but then we put a bunch of programs in place to help them do the things that they needed help with, right? They needed to find jobs. So the economy had changed. So we put the GI Bill together. We gave them tuition to go to school. We gave them preference in jobs. We did all sorts of things to support our veterans. What the hell has happened to that sentiment? Why don't we do the same things anymore?
And it used to be the government behind it, too. I mean, we have a lot of different organizations that do this, try to bring, you know, veterans some peace and all that. And it shouldn't be. It should be done by the men who send them over there. Those same men should make sure when they bring them back that they make them healthy again. You know, because let me tell you, you know, working on armed services, it was always so amazing to hear these guys talk about war and how we need to, you know, to make sure that freedom rings everywhere. But they sure weren't there when it came to funding all the different things that needed to be done for these guys who were wounded or who were in stress or their families were in stress. So, you know, you can't have it one way and not the other.
Well, as soon as they make the District of Columbia the 51st state,
yeah,
and we get our input, I'm going to be up there fighting for these things. I assume that, you know, you'll come to my swearing-in ceremony.
And I will hold your feet to the fire and make sure you do not become like the guys that we've been talking about, believe me.
And you can damn well bet I'll have a camel hair jacket on. I'm going to get – when I get sworn in, and I have one hand on the Bible and the other in the pocket of my camel hair jacket.
And you know what? I'll be plotting you from the corner of my black leather, all right? We'll see what happens from there.
Exactly. They won't let her in. They'll say, Senator, there's a bike chick here.
With a gun. What's she doing?
Wants to come in. And we'll say no. So, America, it's been a good week for the District of Columbia on a lot of levels. I hope it's been a good week for you. Next week, we're going to talk about Emancipation Day, an interesting holiday in the District of Columbia, and we're going to try to get some good guests. So thanks for listening, and I'll let Kathleen have the last word as if I have a choice.
I just want to thank everyone for letting, you know, it's going to be a year, right, Michael? April something?
It's our year anniversary next week.
All right. And we'll be doing something special, and we hope you all will listen, and please Skype us, call us, and let us know how we're doing. And we really look forward, forward to a new year with more people who will be involved in and help us discuss what needs to be discussed and compromise where it needs to be done.
Thanks, America. We'll see you next week.
Nation, 200 years of exploitation.
the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.